This is a Times Online podcast.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers. Welcome to the special bonus Easter edition of The Bugle with all the audio DVD extras that didn't go in the actual editions of The Bugle.
Are you eating a chocolate egg in Spain where you currently are at the moment, Andy?
Yes, I'm guessing as we record this some 10 days in advance of that. Yes, I will be eating a chocolate egg in Spain. What will you be doing?
I will be in Denver, I imagine, splitting an audience right down the middle.
Yeah. Really? Because Easter, don't you usually nail yourself to a cross just to know what it was
yeah,
like?
Yeah, and so half the audience will enjoy that and half won't. I've booked a hill in Denver. Cavalry, Colorado, potato, potato.
Hello, my name is Tom Wright and I'm the producer of The Bugle. I'm here on the Audio Cryptic Crossword Desk where 15 full-time researchers are desperately trying to work out 12 across. And I'll be giving you a sneak preview of how we make the world's only audio newspaper. It all starts on a Friday afternoon for us here in London, that's me and Andy, and in the morning for John over in New York. Once we've connected the studios, there then follows a sustained bout of explosive swearing and pointless noise-making crucial to the recording process.
1, 2, 1, 2.
There it is, bass in your face.
Cock blaster. I've been asked to stop saying that.
And that's enough.
I've got some fresh bullshit this week, John.
Really?
I love the sound of rustling paper.
Yes, good sound.
Oh, yeah. I've got my keys on the desk as well. I thought they could come
into play. Good, good, yeah. Just give the sound a bit of depth.
That's nice. Sound,
classic Pilot Easy Touch pen, that, Andy.
I'll bring a xylophone in next week. I've just bought one on eBay.
And now a special Bugle statistics section.
New York is set to have less than 500 murders this year, the lowest since records began in 1963. Essentially what those statistics are saying is New York 2007 is the best New York in history for low murder rates. And I've been here this year. Has that been a coincidence, Andy? It's hard to say. What have I been doing to unwittingly drop the murder rate of this city? Obviously, I must keep doing it. And maybe I should try and do it on a larger scale.
Have you been eating pastrami sandwiches?
I have been eating pastrami sandwiches, maybe. And I didn't do that before coming here.
Maybe there's some connection there, because I've had 2 pastrami bagels in the last week and haven't killed anyone.
There you go. So despite what the doctors say, maybe pastrami sandwiches are not necessarily good for you, but good for everyone else.
So maybe we should just deploy pastrami sandwiches to Afghanistan. And gherkins. You got to have the gherkins.
Yeah. Pastrami's probably a very popular meat choice in the Middle East, Andy. I don't think that could be misconstrued at all, just airdropping pastrami onto Afghanistan and Palestine. There you go, fill your boots. Oh, you seem cross.
We've all got to be flexible.
In other statistics news, who is the best country in the world? You might think that's difficult to quantify, but you would very much be wrong.
Britain has fallen to 15th in the world reading table from 3rd, I believe it was, a few years ago. Personally, I blame British schools who are increasingly importing overseas kids to read. They've got a much better technique, and it's just made British kids complacent about reading. And I just don't think that the Reading Association have done enough to support grassroots reading. Because it used to be that kids would just go out in the streets and read amongst themselves. And, you know, it's all very well them, you know, reading full-size books on full-size pitches. But it's not really producing the kind of readers this country needs.
The report says that 37% of 10-year-olds in Britain play computer games for 3 or more hours a day. But surely that must have pushed us up the table of how many hours 10-year-olds play computer games. Every cloud has an obese lining, Andy.
And in the teenage pregnancy statistics, the USA and Britain are once again at the top of the Western world's teenage pregnancies. Also, of course, the two countries most committed to the war on terror, which suggests 2 things. One, that the war on terror is really giving our teenagers the horn. And, frankly, who can blame them? Poorly conceived wars with no foreseeable end.
Oh, yeah.
Gets me where it's pure. And what it also suggests is that as nations, we get overexcited at the prospect of an easy conquest without really thinking about the long-term consequences.
Russia were top of the reading list, and South Africa were last. Now, on the plus side, statistically, they probably won't be able to read the results of the report, so as long as you don't draw a picture they can recognise, they should be OK.
A reporter suggested that Prince Harry is statistically the worst-behaved royal at the moment. Although, he's not the worst-behaved royal in history. When you think back to Henry VIII, he killed two women. Police have described them as follows. One was in her mid-30s from Kent, thin but with no head. The other was in her early 20s with dark hair and also no head. And also, in fact, the current queen used to be much more badly behaved than she is now. She spent most of the 1960s playing pranks, you know, dead fish in the toilet, flock of sheep in the snooker room at Sandringham. And she kept pretending to be at death's door and summoning Prince Charles and saying, "My son, destiny is calling you. Can you hear it? Lean in closer." That's why Charles always leans backwards when he talks to people now. And Peter the Great, obviously not a British monarch, but he was pretty naughty. He used to hide dwarves in cakes. That's a fact.
That actually is a fact. The UN also this week released the report on human development. The USA were in 12th place, the UK were in 16th place, Sierra Leone were last in 177th place, and top of the report, Iceland. What a huge win for Iceland, triumphing narrowly over Norway in second place. And this begs the question, what have the Icelanders been up to? Hidden away, tucked up in the North Atlantic? Have they developed an affordable rocket pack? Have they evolved a third arm? No one has been watching the Icelanders, Andy. Now they've probably got laser eyes. You wait. We'll all be speaking Icish by Christmas.
Well, I'll tell you what they do score highly in, and that is cubic litres of ice per capita. They're really good at that. And also volcanic geysers per family. And I think that's probably what's catapulted them to the top.
It's terrible news for Sierra Leone, though, 177th place. That is insult to consistent injury. Still, they've got to focus on the positive. They've got blood diamonds. And, you know, that's something. That's not nothing.
Sudan won the most ludicrous sentence. But in fact, this is scheduled to be one of the most ludicrous sentences of the entire 21st century. And it might even challenge the sentence in 1969, when two Iranian confidence tricksters were sentenced to 7,109 years in jail. But mark my words, they'll be out after about 3,000. Life should mean life. 7 millennia should mean 7 millennia.
Also this week, the Archbishop of Canterbury claimed the US were the worst imperialist ever. Now, hold on, Archbishop. We've lost almost everything from our empire now. Don't take that from us as well. We were savage imperialists. Let's not forget that. In many ways, we were far worse than America are now. The only difference is that we did what we did with that certain gentlemanly swagger.
Well, if you don't think US or the UK are the world's worst imperialist, who is it? Do email us at thebugle@timesonline.co.uk.
As with any landmark in the history of publishing and broadcasting, and indeed of history itself, the pressure can get to John and Andy. Here's some of John's reaction to the audio cryptic crossword that we couldn't broadcast for obvious reasons.
You sound like a bag of spanners, Andy.
Do I?
Yeah. A bag of spanners, I'll tell you.
Really?
Yeah.
You sound like a... The best news of the week, undoubtedly, is that archaeologists claim to have uncovered the cave where Romulus and Remus were apparently suckled by a she-wolf as babies before Romulus, of course, ended up founding Rome. Great day for Rome. I think what it does show, John, given that Romulus ended up killing his brother, is that, as probably most of us suspected all along, wolves are bad parents. And there is a reason why wolves can no longer adopt human children, legally, anyway. They just set a bad example. You know, if a kid sees its wolf mother eating a little girl in the woods, then it's just one small step from that to fratricide. So I think, really, I don't really approve of Romulus and Remus being allowed to be suckled by the wolf, retrospectively.
And yet the liberals would have wolves adopting children left, right and centre, Andy.
They would.
That's why they must be stopped.
They breed wolves in captivity, these liberals, just so they can adopt children in an attempt to found cities that will eventually become great empires before descending due to lead poisoning into total catastrophe.
Wow, that sentence really spiralled out of all control, didn't it, Andy?
It did. Yeah, it started okay.
That sentence seemed to swerve to avoid a cat and ploughed straight into a tree. But finally, archaeologists have at least discovered something worth discovering, because usually it's very boring what they dig up, coins or holes where someone used to go to the toilet 1,500 years ago. But finally, they've hit pay dirt, somewhere where kings were suckled by wolves. But let me say this, that is now the last time I get excited by some broken pottery. You've raised the bar, jump over that bar.
The cave in question was supposed to have played a great part in the Lupercalian Festival in ancient Rome, in which young noblemen would run around a hill, naked except for the skin of a freshly sacrificed goat, hitting women on the hands with strips of goat skin to promote fertility. This is ancient Rome. Now, let's not forget, this is the civilization on which we in the West have based ourselves. Is this the kind of role model we want our civilization to be following?
Yes.
I'm not sure it is, John. That, to me, sounds like crazy behaviour.
Rubbish. Don't knock it until you've tried it. You haven't tried it, so you cannot knock it. Or unless you have tried it.
So which of these seven hills of Rome is your favourite? Do email us in and let us know why. Personally, mine is the Aventine Hill.
Where would you be without Wikipedia?
John, that's fresh from my degree.
Fresh?
Fresh from the degree I paid a small amount of attention to 10 years ago. My 4-year ban is over.
Oh, great.
I don't know why I've been blacklisted for so long.
Comedic differences.
Irreconcilable, yeah. Comedic differences.
This next section is about tax, and to give you some background, Andy is self-employed, and like all self-employed people in the UK, has to fill in a huge self-assessment form, and it has to be completed before the 31st of January, something that, during this section, was approaching rather quickly for Andy.
Tax now, and in the UK, it's that time of year, isn't it, Andy, when you write the government a cheque, don't you, Andy, and hope that you get what you wish for. It's like writing to Father Christmas this time of year if he also wanted a quarter of your income.
Yes, it is the deadline for self-assessment tax forms this week. The darkest, darkest time of the year. Without question, the most abominable day in the British self-employment calendar. A day which looms over the rest of the year like the bacon industry over a nice little baby pig. It's not that I don't like paying tax, John. I love paying tax. I love that feeling of redistributing some of my annual wealth. Makes me feel all tingly inside. It's just the feeling that for at least one day a year I have to behave like an accountant. I just can't live with that.
How many times have you slammed your head into the desk so far?
Well, I've put a big spike in the middle of my desk to try and dissuade myself from doing it.
Good idea. Yeah. But that is going all in. Yeah. You're pushing all your chips across the table there.
But it does raise the question of, are we getting value for money for our taxpayers' pound or dollar in America, or whatever your crazy currencies are around the world, Bugle listeners, particularly in Vietnam, where I believe it... Is it the dong? The Vietnamese dong? Dong, it is the Vietnamese dong.
It is the Vietnamese dong. Well done, Vietnam. Well done. I know you've had a bumpy past, but the dong has always been there for you.
That was a war worth winning. Keep the dong. That's what it was all about.
That's right. You will not take my dong. Oh, dear. We're in our 30s. Is this the way that you imagined adulthood being, Andy? Because I don't think it is mine.
What would you imagine your adulthood to be like then?
Actually, no, it was pretty much exactly like this.
Yeah.
I'm an American taxpayer now, Andy, so I'm getting big value for money. As a British taxpayer, your tax largely goes into healthcare, education and statues of Princess Diana. But I'm an American taxpayer, Andy. Albeit a non-immigrant rate of tax, which essentially means they take everything I earn. But what I get back for it is incredible. Space races. Biggest military in the world. I'd pay for that now, Andy. I'm getting bang for my buck. My army could beat up your army.
We don't like paying tax in Britain. It brings us out in a rash. And the general British attitude towards tax is everything in this country has gone wrong. I blame the government. If this is all they can do, I don't see why I should pay them a penny. Thereby perpetuating the problem. People seem to think that criminals should pay for their own prison bills, that immigrants should pay for their own flights home, and also to clean up all the anti-immigrant graffiti they provoke. But are we getting value for money? I mean, I think there have been some remarkable instances of value for money recently over here, John. We had the Ministry of Defence paying out £3 million of public money to 360 ex-servicemen who were tricked in the 1950s into being guinea pigs in nerve gas experiments. That is £8,300 each for being given sarin nerve gas when they thought they were basically taking Lemsip.
That noise you're going to hear, Andy, is my heart swelling with pride at my government.
Well, basically, half a century of physical and mental ill health for £8,000 to the taxpayer. That is a bargain. Now, I know the servicemen who sacrificed their well-being so that we could pick up where the Nazis had left off with their very important nerve gas research programme, which was, of course, cruelly interrupted by losing the war. And, you know, these servicemen have been on the wrong end of one of the most pitiful pieces of compensation, basically since Britain gave its empire cricket and an apology note. Actually, they're not sure they actually got the apology note in the end. It's still in the outro.
It's my job to compress over an hour of material into around 30 minutes duration. I've given up trying to get them to be more brief, because last time I tried, this was the result.
Want to bust a mark that someone could feasibly run a marathon in that time?
How long was that? 82 minutes. You're going to be busy tomorrow, aren't you?
82! That is a decent dart score.
82!
82! Yeah, actually, 82, that's not that bad. That's not a disaster.
Triple 14, double tops, I'd say. Bugle Tiger News now, and according to the World Wildlife Fund, the world population of tigers is down to about 3,500. It's halved in the last 25 years. Part of the problem, John, is this curious Chinese belief that eating a tiger's penis is a cure for impotence. Whereas in reality, it is in fact only a cure for, I've got to say this right, atigropeophagiosis, or in layman's terms, the medical condition of not having eaten a tiger's penis, a disease whose only known symptoms are occasionally looking shifty in a zoo, and in extreme cases, drawing stripes on a banana before wolfing it with the frenzied glee of a genuine pervert.
Eating a tiger's penis is mainly a cure for not having more tigers. It's clear now, this depressing story shows that we cannot rely on the international community to save the planet unsupervised. Their current approach is tantamount to parking their car in the garage, running a hose pipe from the exhaust in through the window and starting the ignition, without even having the courtesy to leave a note for future generations, apologising for letting them down and explaining that it just got a bit too much. And the problem seems to stem from a study of the average person's priorities, where tiger survival came in at number 74, just ahead of funding for the arts, and just behind the fear of being eaten by a tiger.
It's interesting also how much the tiger population around the world has fallen since Tiger Woods came onto the golf scene. Because he, of course, personally killed a tiger before every tournament and uses its head as a cover for his driver. And if that's not true, sue us.
That is an open invitation.
And now a special Bugle feature section. On privacy. Privacy, well, we all like it, John, especially if it's our own. In fact, we're not really fussed about anyone else's. But we like our own privacy, John. And effectively, due to the government, most of us now have a civil servant sitting in the bath with us whenever we wash our hair. Do you really want to live like that?
Well, a German court recently ruled that spying on personal computers violates privacy. The Germans wanted to send emails that would infect a recipient's computer with spy software and relay information to police computers. But surely terrorists would just be well advised just to not open any spam mail that has "Do you have a violent grudge against the West" in its subject line. Click here for West hating. Just don't open it. And this recent report revealed that Italians are the most spied upon people in the world. What are they up to, these Italians? Or do they just like spying on each other?
I think what they're up to, John, is mostly having affairs and being spied on by angry wives.
That's interesting, because a Greek man protested at this legislation, saying, "If I choose to have an affair with a woman who is not my wife, that is my fundamental human right, and I should be protected from being caught on camera." He's willing to jeopardise the entire nation for a hypothetical affair. What a proud Greek.
But the government basically knows absolutely everything about everyone these days, which is quite a useful fallback in a lot of ways. If you forget what you're supposed to be doing one day, you just need to hack into the government's secret file on you, and you could probably take a reasonably educated guess why it is that you're carrying 3 bags of fertiliser, an annotated map, and a mobile phone you've been told not to use. The government promised that it will guard people's private information, and in Britain, they've shown that they will guard that information with the determination and rigour of a dog guarding a plate of steak.
Also, it's been announced this week that Britain has invented a security camera that can see through clothes. A British company has developed a camera which can detect weapons, drugs or explosives hidden under people's clothes from up to 25 metres away in what could be seen as a breakthrough for the security industry. And this makes perfect sense. We can save the world through our strategic use of carry-on film-style science. This camera is to be mounted to a pair of large glasses worn by a short, fat man, and he'll use them by first looking at expensively dressed women, looking at their underwear, turning to a policeman and saying, "Ooh-ah."
This will work superbly well if and only if Al-Qaeda starts recruiting more hotties. But there are cameras everywhere now, John. This is a camera-based world we live in. I've got a little story that shows the extent of cameras in the world. Whilst I had myself under surveillance for terrorism the other week, I was doing some background checks on myself, my wife and my one-year-old daughter. And I was in the British State Eavesdropping Archives when I came across the case of Wendell Sklidge, a man from Tunbridge Wells in Kent, just south of London, who's currently serving a 12-minute prison sentence for public spitting. But anyway, on March the 12th of this year, Sklidge was at a bus stop, and he casually expectorated on the pavement. Now, the proof of this was in the footage from 32 of the 33 CCTV cameras, which just happened to be trained on that bus stop at that moment. So here's the audio footage from the closed-circuit tape recorder at that bus stop. Now, it just sounds like an innocent everyday spit, John, but the government ran the trajectory of the resulting flob through its CCTV database and matched its parabola with 16 other bus stop gollies dating back 3 years. Back at the Home Office, understandably, alarm bells literally rang, so they scraped the offending morsel of expectorate off the road, compared it with the sputum they took from the man when he last yawned in a polling booth, and, well, you've guessed it, this man had been responsible for no fewer than 134 public gobbing incidents since 2004. Of course, the government already had Sklidge's DNA on file, not to mention his credit rating, details of his internet usage, everywhere he's driven for the past 8 years, his golf handicap and his personal shopping proclivities. They also know that he went to the doctor 2 months ago just to see if he could get a nurse he fancied to jiggle his testicles. She was off for the day, so instead he pretended he thought he had a headache, and a nurse he didn't fancy jiggled his testicles anyway. The government also knows that every day he places a 10p bet on what he's going to have for lunch, but he's never won any of them. So Sklidge was banged to rights, he's in jail, and he now has a lifetime criminal record. And sure, by the end of this broadcast, he will be a free man. But that's not the point, because if being constantly filmed by private CCTV cameras is what it takes to stop Al-Qaeda from spitting on my pavements, sign me up and film me walking about everywhere. If I'm not doing anything wrong, I've got nothing much to worry about, other than institutionalised misuse of my personal information. But we're not the kind of country that would use this technology for dubious purposes. Remember, kids, we're not the baddies in this pantomime. The point is, civil liberties are like dogs, John. We love our own, but we get really annoyed when other people's civil liberties keep shitting on our lawns. And we get really embarrassed when a civil liberty starts humping our trouser leg. And like dogs, I think Britain could get by without civil liberties, but probably wouldn't be as happy doing so. So maybe civil liberties actually should be taken to a canal and humanely drowned. And a final fact about privacy, the British government has been collecting urine samples from every British citizen since the year 1781, when urination was legalised. Previous to that, it had been like lesbianism. The people kind of knew it happened, but the king really wasn't prepared to accept that it did. All this urine is kept in a special vault under the Tower of London. They're still going through the back catalogue to check for illegal substances. They have found out that poet John Keats was on nandrolone. Your emails now, and this comes from Tanya in California, a disturbing email. She writes, "I just thought you would like to know that a woman in Malaysia was jailed for joining a teapot-worshipping cult. You being British and all, I wanted to warn you, Malaysia is onto you. Stay alert." Those are ominous words, John. If Malaysia is starting to clamp down on teapot worshipping, then I, for one, can never set foot in Malaysia. Hotties from history now. And this nomination comes from regular emailer Brett Sonnenschein, who nominates America's 21st president, Chester A. Arthur. He gives 8 reasons why Arthur should be a bugle hottie from history. I'm not going to give you all of those reasons, just numbers 5, 7, and 8. 5 is puppy dog eyes that make you forgive him for the Chinese Exclusionary Act of 1884. Well, you can't argue with that. Otherwise, I would be bearing that grudge till today. And reasons 7 and 8 are those mutton chops, those glorious mutton chops. It's good that each of the mutton chops was a separate reason in itself, Brett. Thanks again for your correspondence. And this comes from Doug Ashington in Ramsgate, in the beautiful county of Kent, in England. He writes, "While listening to your section on roadkill last week, it occurred to me that you seem to have skimmed the surface of the subject. Since we now know that Prozac is no better than a placebo, you must differentiate between animals that were killed by accident and animals that commit suicide on the roads. If the animals are being asked to be a stain on someone's remould, they cannot be counted as roadkill." What? Oh, so... "If the animals are asking to be a stain on someone's remould, they cannot be counted as roadkill." That's a very important differentiation, Doug, and we will alert the relevant authorities to it. And all I can say is that my car was once completely ruined by a suicidal fox on the A421.
A421, Andy?
Yeah.
Was that... Where were you going there? Luton? Bedford? You were probably coming off the M1, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Or were you trying to get to the M1? Maybe you were trying to go M1, A1 due to traffic.
Yeah. All I know, John, is that on the A303, which, as we all know, is Britain's greatest trunk road. There's never
Britain's
any...
Great, the world's greatest.
There's never any roadkill on that, and that's because that's such an inspirational road that all animals thinking of either killing themselves on that road or crossing the road think, no, I'm not going to do that, I'm going to live another day. Well done, the A303. Tom's looking bored now.
As well I might be. But then I don't share John and Andy's deep, deep love of Britain's secondary road network. So to finish off, here's a report from the world's procrastinating championships.
And finally, in the world's procrastinating championship playoff first leg in Montevideo, Uruguay have taken a 2-delay advantage over Australia, although the Fritteroos doggedly hung in there and set up a potentially lengthy second leg in the Melbourne time-wasting arena next week. The Uruguayan skipper Juan Ignacio Sanchez Francescoli made the crucial play when he organised all his books into alphabetical order by title, then changed his mind, reverted them back to alphabetised by author, then lined them up by height, tallest on the left, of course, then split them into piles of books he's read, piles of books that he wants to read, books he likes to own but realistically knows he will never read, and books he can't remember how he acquired. He then took 10 of the books he wanted to read, put them on his desk, returned the others to their original author alphabetised configuration, with hardbacks on the left and paperbacks to the right, regardless of book title or publication date. All this to avoid having to call the plumber to have a look at a faulty radiator. The Australian captain and Fritteroo legend Trevor Snookler reduced the deficit in the final unfrantic hours of the match by seeing how many slices he could cut a gherkin into. His score was 32, with the third of the 85 gherkins on which he operated.
Some of the magic has probably gone now that I see the workings of this, and it's like the end scene of The Wizard of Oz, where it's just an old man with a moustache pulling on some levers behind a curtain. That's what I feel. I guess that's what we learn from slightly too much scrutiny on the process of making the Bugle, is that life is one long disappointment leading to inevitable death.
It's always good to keep that in mind while you're recording, because you never know, do you? You know, doom.
That's the thing about doom, it can creep up on you.
It's like a duck.
Doom is just like a duck. It can creep up on you, it's incredibly buoyant, and it loves wet bread.
Well, we hope you like those bonus audio DVD extras, and we'll be back next week with a proper edition.
A real Bugle, popping proudly.
Bye.
Goodbye.